Welcome to our fostering podcast. I'm Angela Hunt, one of the founders of To the Moon and Back Foster Care. There are around 44,000 foster families in England, and it's estimated that 9,500 families will be needed over the next 12 months in the UK. The number is not reducing. It wasn't that long ago that it was 8,500. And we think, given the situation currently economically and the challenges facing a lot of families, the likelihood is that more children will be needing our services in the future.
Welcome, Sarah. It's absolutely a pleasure to have you join us and in discussion, because I know you have such a lot to offer and the work that you do, particularly with Foster Wiki, but everything you've done leading up to Foster Wiki has enabled you to look at, you know, empowering foster carers and in particular, you know, how do you ensure that people are well educated? So I'm just thrilled that you've given some time to be able to join us. In respect to one of the things that we get asked about is about transferring for foster carers who have been approved with one agency or a local authority, for example. Some foster carers maybe aren't fully aware that they can change their agency by transferring their fostering approval.
Yeah.
And it's always, I think, one of the things that I was quite shocked about when I first started working within the fostering sector was it's like no other job, really, is it?
And yeah, no other job.
in any other job, we can move around and it is the same for foster carers, but then somehow there's a bit of a stigma around it. And some foster carers are very wary about moving. They maybe not aware that things could be better elsewhere. I suppose, you know, from your work in particular with Foster Wiki, how are you finding that foster carers are approaching transferring or not?
Oh, well, first of all, I'd just like to say I'm equally thrilled to be here. And, you know, you and I have spoken a lot and worked together. And I feel that, you know, Foster Wiki brand and integrity is around promoting excellence. And we come in from a different view of excellence to, say, Ofsted, and they could probably, you know, do with a little bit more of, you know, asking foster carers how practice and policy and procedure work, as opposed to just do you get enough training and support, because we are the frontline workers who deliver foster care on a daily basis. And I think actually that ties quite neatly into the question of transferring as well, because every carer should have the right to transfer if they're not being treated properly or they're not getting the support they want. And most importantly, if the children aren't getting the support they need. And we are at Foster Wiki, we're fiercely advocating transferring. Now, it never affects the children because they don't know anything about it. It's just paperwork going on in the background. But it hugely affects foster carers and their ability to work. If you're not getting what you need, it's just like anybody else, you know, who's working anywhere else in the country for a company. If they're very unhappy, they can just move. And that's what we need to do with foster carers. There are issues, let's be honest and real about the issues in transferring. We've got a very, very unique way of being. Well, we're not employed, we're self-employed. But the Form F is basically our license to practice, and that is owned by the people that we foster for.
The assessment tool.
So, the assessment tool. So, in effect, although we're self-employed, we're actually, you know, governed by this license that the actual provider kind of owns, if you like. So, when we want to transfer, we have to do one again, pretty much, with another provider. That puts a lot of people off. However, I know people like To the Moon and Back and good agencies and local authorities will have a really streamlined process for that. Yeah. And they welcome transfers and carers because they're welcoming in somebody with a lot of experience already, and they can enhance the agency or the new local authority. And it's every carer's right, in my opinion, to have that flexibility, and it should be their right. I think one of the other tricky things is, this is the interesting thing, carers are a really valued commodity. I don't like to, you know, it's probably hard hearing those sort of kind of, you know, industry words in what is a caring profession, but we are a very, very valuable commodity. We're worth a lot to agencies, worth a lot to local authorities. Sometimes you would, don't always feel like that because carers don't, that value isn't always passed on, and that's why people will want to transfer. But then when you want to transfer, or you mention you're going to transfer, there's there can be other tricky things that crop up that the agency you're with suddenly do not want you to transfer because of you being such a valuable commodity. And they might obstruct the transfer by sudden standards of care allegations appearing from nowhere. And I'm not going to beat around a bush and pretend that doesn't happen. I think we have to be really open and transparent about those kind of things. So that makes carers more nervous about transferring as well. The Fostering Network have a super transfer protocol. Foster Wiki have a really good transfer protocol. We have transfer pages. We have templates for the intention to transfer letter. We have all kinds of top tips and pages on how to transfer safely and what the protocol is. So I'm really up for encouraging more people to transfer. And for me, it's about raising standards across the board. Yes. If carers walk with their feet and say, this isn't good enough, then, you know, the people that aren't good enough will have to up their game to keep people, to retain carers. Carers are getting a little bit more vocal now. They're feeling a little bit more secure with the things like Foster Wiki and the new Foster Carers Union, the NUPFC. We've got Say So on Foster Wiki, where you're able to safely make a complaint or raise an issue. And I think that all-round empowerment of carers, you know, should also give them the courage to transfer when it's not good enough where they are.
Yeah. I suppose, you know, you've touched on quite a few things there. I guess the, you know, it is difficult to hear the commodity word, the valuable commodity word. And I would say, you know, as an agency, what we see is with transferring foster carers is definitely we recognise that there's a value for the services that they provide, and that will transfer to our agency, and we will use that in, you know, continue to use it in the positive way that we do, which is to ensure that there's, you know, really good service available to foster carers, which is vital. And I think there's an additional piece there as well around the value added approach, that where you join, say for example you were to join to the Moon and Back foster care, then what we would look at is having, you know, new foster carers, so carers who are newly approved, new to fostering with their, you know, less experience, but working alongside foster carers who have transferred, who come with a wealth of experience.
The knowledge bank, I call
it. Definitely.
It's and the most underused utility in the whole of fostering services, the foster carers knowledge bank, which is what Foster Wiki is all about, of course.
Yeah, definitely. And there's such a, you know, to see, you know, that is such a value to us as an agency. And we get, you know, lots of people new to fostering join us, and to be able to bring in new people who have experienced a different way of doing things as well. So as an agency, we are open to, you know, and how did you do that? And what did that look like? And how did that feel? And if there's some positives in there, then we learn as an agency as well. So the ability to, when you're having a new person join as a transferring foster care, is phenomenal for the agency as well. And as well as the financial benefits, which enables, you know, brings more money to the agency, which enables the agency to use it wisely, which is what they should be doing in the first place. But I think for me, looking at, you know, when I speak to people who are interested in transferring, I try to, I know it's difficult, so they often come with almost concerns about saying it out loud. And it's almost like they can hear us when they're telling me this, you know, the fact it's confidential, that I'm the last person who's going to go and tell anybody else if they don't want us to, and to manage that anxiety until they're ready to make the decision and enable them to feel comfortable to be able to share what's really going on. Because I think it's important as a new agency to understand what they've experienced, because if you can't offer them what they're really looking for, then you were doing a disservice to them to say, yeah, we can offer you all of that, because the chances are they're still not going to get what they wanted, and then they're going to move again, which is awful. So I think there's a real responsibility on any agency who is speaking to people who are looking to transfer to be really honest. And I know, you know, we talk about the relational point of view. We're not the biggest agency. We're not a corporate. If you're looking for a corporate style, we're not your agency. But if you're looking for something that is very relational, that is extremely individualized, and where you are valued and your ability to help us develop will be seized upon, we are definitely the right agency. So it's trying to, because I think people do want different things, and it's important for that to happen. And I take upon, you know, what you were saying about this kind of awful situation, and to be fair, we've seen it as well, where people have said they were transferring, and then out of the blue, some sort of issue arises, you know, an allegation or a complaint, or there's some delaying going on. And, you know, it's really difficult sitting on the other side as an agency who is, you know, keen, because once people have made the decision they're going to move, they need to do it expediently, don't they? Because otherwise the children will potentially suffer. We want the carers to just be able to concentrate on what they do well and not be pulled into loads of politics. But we do find that happens. And I think, you know, the advice that I know you've given to people before is, when you are looking to transfer, make sure, for example, that, you know, if you're in a union, you copy them in to any...
And also, you don't say anything until you're fairly sure. Because, and never say anything in anger, you know, oh, I'm going to transfer then. That doesn't help. And I think you touched on something important there in the, in you know, this is why we love To the Moon and Back, that kind of ethical framework you've got, where if you can't supply what the transferring carer is looking for, you'd be really honest about it. Because actually, this is a conversation that cropped up with the Department for Education a couple of weeks ago. They asked me about empty beds. And unfortunately, there are less scrupulous agencies who will just simply take on any carer that comes to them because of that value that it does add to an agency. I say this because I think this is the kind of information foster carers need to have so that they can make considered decisions. It's no good saying, you know, well, foster carers don't need to know about the inner workings of the industry. Yes, they do. It's their industry. And again, you know, that's not a word we like to use, industry, when we're talking about the care of children. But unfortunately, that's what it is. We need to, you know, get carers more educated and informed on the whole system of transferring. And of course, every single agency will tell you they're marvellous. And every single local authority, every website you go to, they're all giving the best support. They're all giving, you know, what you actually need is impartial and independent feedback, like the kind you get from FosterWiki, and recommendations from independent sources and from foster carers themselves, because, you know, you can't believe everything it says on the tin, and you will get into a situation. I had a friend of mine transferred and was empty for a year.
Wow.
And went through her entire savings because this agency had promised her, you know, that she could have children under 12, and none came through. So I think that I thank you for that honesty and transparency. And that's, as I say, why we like you, because that's so important when carers are looking to move.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the transparency element is, I mean, it goes without saying with our agency, we are very transparent about the good and the bad. You know, if there's challenges, we need people to know about it. But I think it's also, when we're trying to be relational, I mean, that the Form F, you talked about the Form F. The Form F is such a crucial element of assessment. And in some ways, whilst it might be seen as totally repetitive for transferring foster carers to have to go through it all again, I'd agree as well. What we try and do is we see it as really informative. So we're getting to know the foster carers really, really well. It's good for matching later on. It enables them to learn much more about the agency, because the way that our assessors work is they understand our culture. They, you know, they're sharing as much information as the foster carers are sharing. So one of the things that we try and do is We use the assessment as almost, for a transferring foster carer, as an almost of a review, you know, especially if they have a copy of their Form F, which is always good because you can almost see them. They're generally coming through as new to fostering at that stage. So it might be years old, and there's an awful lot to kind of say, well, how have you grown in this time? And it's a bit of a reflection, and it can be a really positive experience actually when we do it well. And also looking at elements of how the development, there might be some areas of development that we can say you might benefit from this. We're not saying you're going to have to go and do the skills to foster course again, for goodness sake, that would be patronizing, but there might be elements of, you know, you might benefit from this bit because we do this differently to most agencies, and we want you to see how we do that and input into it. That's worked really well. So a lot of our transferring foster carers, they have joined in with a lot of the skills to foster. And I mean, we've benefited massively from that because they've been able to help with people who are new to fostering to see, you know, they've reflected on what their fostering career has been like so far and all their experiences. So they benefit from that, people who are new to fostering. But likewise, I think each one of them, and we've had a few, each one of them have gone away and said, we got so much out of that. Thank you so much for enabling us to join. Whereas if we said you must do this, people are going to go, why?
Yes, yeah, especially experienced carers. You're going to get a lot of kickback from that because a lot of the training we do, and as you know, we've got a project underway to stop that kind of repeat and repetitive stuff, a more streamlined path, educational pathway for carers and a career progression. But I think, it's absolutely right that when somebody's transferring, you have to be transparent and honest with them. You must be transparent and honest with them. But the other thing I'd really like to say and put the spanner in the works a little is that's all very well and good, but it must be done in a timely fashion. I've transferred and I nearly gave up. I was transferring from agency to Hampshire County Council, actually. And the process was so ridiculous. I don't think they're so bad anymore. It was many, many moons ago. But I mean, 8 months later, and they were still messing around and dinging around. And I was like, no, you know, what we have to do is make this process much more streamlined. Yes. And people don't want to experience carers. The other problem you've got is once you're transferring, you're usually transferring because you're not content where you are. So once you start to transfer that process, if it takes forever, you're stuck in limbo with an agency or provider that you're not getting on with. So whilst I appreciate that it is a process of getting to know and everything, I still feel that we need to do that in a much quicker way. I don't mean you just skip any bits or leave any bits out, but I think there has to be a way where some of it's streamlined because it's been done before, you know, and the new bits can be done. And the getting to know, quote, I agree with you, it's a great thing. But I don't think it's, the process is, without a shadow of a doubt, everywhere too long. People say, oh, it should be done in a, you know, in 6 weeks. I've never known it done that quickly. And it frustrates carers. They give up. They don't want to continue. There are so many barriers to transferring that we need to smooth out and make the process really easy in order to raise standards, in order to give carers the rights and the freedoms that they should have in changing provider.
And this probably, I totally agree with you. I'm not going to disagree with you at all. I think it's, I suppose it's a bit like a tanker. It's so big, it's got to turn it around and it takes a long time. But I suppose there's, you know, what we've always said when we first started the agency, we wanted to do things differently. We're open to doing that. We're open to being more swift. There are ways that you can cut back on the time. I suppose what's part of what I think is needed is ensuring that, you know, fostering full stop, regardless of whether you're new or whether you've been fostering for a long time and you're transferring, is a huge decision. And what we can see is that, you know, the high percentage of people who either leave fostering, having fostered only for a short amount of time once they've gone through the approval process, to people who, you know, leave for a whole multitude of reasons, or leave their agency because they weren't happy, because they probably hadn't taken all the time they needed in the first place to make the right decision, or not necessarily understanding, a bit like what you were saying, you know, go and speak to the people who will tell you the truth. A bit like, you know, we always recommend go and speak to our foster carers. Here's a group of foster carers. Mm. They will tell you as it is, because we don't pay them to say things to people. But we know that we have got such a high satisfaction level that if they picked on any one of them, there would be things that they'd say, oh, you know, Angela could do this better or whatever.
Mm. Oh, the system's never going to be perfect.
No, I wish.
What, nobody coming into this is imagining that it's going to be perfect. I mean, that's the other daft thing is, you know, I think I put something up on LinkedIn about, you know, if people say to me, oh, now that Fosterwick is, you know, working on recruitment, you know, are you going to cut back on criticising the industry? And I'm like, not in a million years, because it also does people a disservice, either transferring or new recruits. It does them a disservice to think that they don't know things need improving. Yeah. There isn't a person in the country who doesn't know children's services need improving, that foster care is, you know, we haven't got enough foster carers, that children's outcomes aren't what they should be. And, you know, we'll never develop a world-class fostering service if we pretend there's nothing wrong.
Exactly.
And people are not that stupid. They're coming into foster care. They know the issues and the problems.
Well, it's good governance anyway, isn't it? For any, wherever you work, I mean, you know, bearing in mind my background is in healthcare, and you're constantly looking at ways to improve, and you use things that are potentially broken, or, you know, they're not functioning as well as they could be. Mm. You use that as your basis for, well, how can we improve it? Mm. And the day you stop doing that should be worrying.
Yes,
I think
absolutely.
There's an inertia. Mm. Inertia, I think, within the sector in some areas where people are unwilling to try and do things differently because, well, that's the way we've always done it. Or
it's
going to cost too much money. They're not willing to put the investment in. Well, it's totally short-sighted.
Because it's very short-sighted.
This is not a short-sighted problem. It's a long-term problem, and we need to get it, need to get it right. So we, as long as we're constantly evolving, it's going to be a good thing. I think one of the things that I was trying to refer to was the fact that when you've decided that transferring is what you want to do, then it's important from the relational aspects that you find the right agency and probably use the time. I'm not suggesting that we delay the process. I think we're delaying there's not going to be a sales team sitting on our side to say, thank you very much. Now you just fill out this form and then off you come. You know, it's no. I'm going to send you some information. Let's have a chat. I'll come and meet you.
Yes.
And there's no commitment on their part. This is about, I want you to make the right decision. And the chances are it will be me that people will meet. Mm. I like to, on behalf of Alison and I as the founders, I do like to meet everybody and I do like them to understand how we work, so we spend that time to make
and how important that they can actually speak to the people that run the agency. I think that once you get too far removed from, you know, we know a lot of huge agencies, I'm not saying they're not good, some are excellent and some have excellent branches, but there is that sense of being distanced from, you know, from the rest of the team, as it were. And I think for me, that's one of the huge advantages of To the Moon and Back, is that feeling that it is an integral part of that whole team from the top to the bottom. Yeah. And that, you know, the top are listening.
Absolutely.
So to go out and meet people when they want to transfer and things is part of that excellence, I think.
Yeah, and definitely about hearing, you know, absolutely hearing it firsthand, what's potentially gone wrong for them. So that, because, you know, we're a very creative agency as well. So there's always got to be, well, like, how can we make that? How could we make that not happen again?
Mm.
What other things could we do? But using and empowering the carers themselves in that, you know, I think that's really important. And that's, but you can only do that when you've got trust. And I suppose that relational peace brings about a level of trust, because there's so many people say, oh, I've got no trust in that agency, they've not given us what we needed. You think, okay, well, how did the trust break down? And inevitably, you know, with any kind of relationship where you've got an inequality, trust will be an issue. So, yeah. You know, I've talked about it before where we've had, you know, with children, we know when children come to live with our foster carers and in our service, we get to know almost everything about them. You know, it comes in a referral form, the majority of it. So you get all this information. They don't know anything about us. They don't know anything about our foster carers. In the same way, foster carers, they come to us, we get the Form F assessment, which has everything about them.
Mm.
They still don't know anything about us.
So no, I think it's absolutely
really important that we
I would say that's one of the power imbalances in foster care. You know, it's if somebody knows everything about you, including all your deepest, darkest, you know, background, that it makes you very vulnerable when you know nothing about the other.
Yeah.
That's with my, you know, psychotherapeutic hat on. It's that kind of imbalance, power, and it creates a power imbalance. I think also that goes back to new recruits and existing foster carers. It's the word professional is quite controversial. You know, are carers professionals or not? And it's also quite a woolly term, being a professional. But I certainly, without a shadow of a doubt, think that foster carers should be treated professionally.
Yeah.
And also new people coming in should be treated professionally. If you're recommending somebody to an agency with transferable skills, which is, you know, is one of my sort of, you know, I'm championing the widening of the demographic for people that we recruit. And it because it takes a wide variety of all sorts of people to you know, create this world-class fostering that we need. Now, if you're then sending somebody to a local authority and, you know, the person on the other phone is sort of treating them like a very sweet six-year-old and, you know, coming, oh, you wanted to be a foster carer, you know, it's not going to forge a sense of them feeling valued and respected right from day one.
Yeah.
I think we have to up the game in terms of how we are actually treating the workforce, and, you know, try and stop the them and us culture, which you don't have, and it's really important. But we have to treat people as equal professionals, or meet them, you know, on a level. Yeah. And not, we really have to get away from this sort of old orphan Annie syndrome with the foster carers, the old woman in the shoe, you know, all the old narratives. Let's ditch the whole bloody lot and let's start, you know, making sure that we do build this world-class fostering workforce, because without variety and without the knowledge and experience of everybody around us, I really, really want to bring people more with more professional transferable skills into fostering and encourage them, you know, as to how that will look and how it can be.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that anybody else, you know, it's this wide net, and we need to widen it, because actually recruitment's very slow at the moment. What's worse, and this is something you see, everything that we're talking about in this transferring process and the moon and back's ethos, the other thing is the conversion rate from inquiry to approved foster carer is shocking. And so many missed opportunities.
I agree.
And yeah. It's hugely about the way people are treated on first contact, how they're spoken to, how they're perceived, you know, the narrative, everything. I think 168,000 people inquired to be carers last year. And I think it translated into about 2,500 foster carers.
I saw some figures about that.
It's shocking.
It is shocking. I know that... I know that there's kind of a national average that is still talked about as a 10%. That 10% of inquiries will lead to people becoming carers. Well, that's not those figures that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Aren't.
No, it's then it's lower. It's not 10%. It's much lower. And it's such a wasted opportunity.
Absolutely.
I can't believe they all weren't suitable, you know.
Well, I mean... We know that there's tick boxes. If you don't fit in the box, you can't get through. You know, we say, well, we do quirky, and that's probably the wrong word to use, but we are open. We are open because there's such, you know, each child is individual. So they're going to come with individual needs and requirements and, you know, types of support. So we need to be more open to people's abilities, potential, I think, is, you know, whenever we talk about in our panel, we always say new people who are coming through panel, you're talking about potential. In a year's time, when they come back for their annual reviews, then, yeah, you're looking at, you've actually got something tangible to measure, whereas initially it is about potential. So what we're trying to do, and I mean, our conversion rate is much higher than,
you know,
we're talking like 60-70% in some cases. It's not always been like that, I hasten to add, but I think the way that we've changed how we speak to people in respect to how we portray what we do. So we don't put adverts out there that says, oh, all you need is a spare bedroom and a bit of love in your heart, you know.
Yeah.
No, you don't. And it's actually a huge role. And we're looking for people with the abilities to be curious and open to how behaviours, where they're coming from, and understanding what trauma actually does to children, you know, neuroscience and the way that they develop, and how do we deliver great service on the back of that knowledge. And, you know, I remember going to a local authority, and Alison and I first founded the agency, and we said, oh, you know, we're looking to create a therapeutic service. And basically, you know, this guy, I won't name him, just said, so basically you're just going for the high end fostering services, which is going to pay you the most money. And I said, can I just correct you there?
Yeah.
That is not at all what we are saying. What we're saying is that every single foster carer that comes through our assessment process will have the knowledge to understand what trauma, how it affects the children.
Well, can I just say something?
Professionals?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just say something there. If a foster carer isn't practicing in a trauma-informed and therapeutic way, how are they practicing?
Yeah.
There is no such thing. Obviously, yes, you can get more specialist carers, but every single, and this is part of our education pathway, every single carer, in my view, even before they start, should be have a basic knowledge in trauma-informed care.
Yeah.
And that should be obligatory, not, you know, not something that's stuck on 2 years down the road.
Yeah.
And also, I'd like to ask you another question as well, because a lot of listeners will be, you know, wondering about maybe transferring agencies, and they might be with local authorities. And there's this sort of kind of, you know, often people say, what's the difference between local authorities and agencies? And there's this reputation that agencies only get the most difficult children and have no little children. Mm-hmm. And so to what's, give me a really honest feedback on that, on the, you know, the type of young people and children that you have in to foster.
At the moment, you put me on the spot now, I'd need to have done a bit of research, I think, before this, but at the moment we have an awful lot of younger children, an awful lot.
Right.
It changed, actually. We noticed a huge change as the run-up to COVID. We were getting a lot of younger children. Clearly, there's still a huge need for older children.
Massive.
So, you know, teenagers, still a huge area for need. But I think in understanding, even, you know, from that point of view, there's a big area of concern, isn't there? You know, I think the media doesn't help, where it kind of propagates that all teenagers, particularly in the care system, are aggressive, you know, violent, they bring gang culture. Yeah. And yet, you know, I don't think our young people have got that. You know, they are still children, they are still scared.
Oh, absolutely.
They've had trauma. They've had usually a long history, haven't they, of
yes. Well,
issues,
as you know,
with their families. I mean, bless them. When I love looking after teenagers, I really do. And I think there's a huge disconnect, I think, with people who come and say, I only want little ones because they're easier to look after. Okay, tell us where that's coming from.
Yes.
And, you know, keep an open mind. And, you know, let's talk about how older children might be and how actually there's such a lot of associated support work needed with younger children, an awful lot.
Yes.
It's a real misconception of children who are tiny, you know, the amount of contacts that's needed.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, everything that goes with raising a young
child. Me an independent teenager any day. Well, as you know, I've fostered teenagers for 15 years.
Yeah.
And we've never said no, you know, with step downs and all sorts. And we have a wonderful extended family, a great, you know, we've had the most challenging. They're not challenging. History is challenging. Their trauma is difficult for them. And, you know, once you understand what's underpinning all that, all those behaviours, to be honest, you know, people send me a referral and it looks like hell on legs. And then what walks up the path? A very broken, upset, depressed, you know, child sort of phone clutched in one hand and a bag of bits in the other. And, you know, you think, oh, that doesn't look like the referral form.
Absolutely.
And I think you've really touched on something so important there. There is such a big piece of work that we need to do around fostering teenagers, because a lot of them are ending up independent, living before they should do. A lot of them are ending up in homes. There are some fantastic homes and there are some children really suited to homes. I'm not residential, and that's important to say, but there's an awful lot that go to residential because there's no place fostering or placement available. So I think we have a huge piece of work that we should do on
I think that's going to be another podcast for sure.
Well, yeah,
we could have another hour on that.
I wrote the Foster Wiki page on teenagers, actually. I'm very proud of that page, and I think that it gives a really full and detailed account of the, you know, the how fostering teenagers can really enrich your life.
Yeah.
Oh, is it challenging? Of course it is, you know, but you're right, all age groups are. God, yeah. I would never have a baby in a million years. You know, that's just not, you know, I know.
It's a good job that we've got such a variety of people who want different things.
Yeah, I'd rather have a daughter having babies. That's what's so important as well about us as a workforce, our uniqueness, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I'm conscious that we, you know, we could talk for hours and hours and hours, I think, couldn't we? There's, I guess from your point of view, having been, you know, a foster carer yourself and just as the work that you're doing now with the founding of Foster Wiki, and thinking from your perspective, what do you think is kind of the best advice to somebody who is, you know, listening to this and thinking about actually, you know, changing their provider and transferring their approval? What advice would you give them? What are the top tips?
First of all, the top tips I would say is just keep it to yourself until you're absolutely sure, and until you've done all your research into the agencies you want to go to, and be the really important thing is go somewhere independent, like Foster Wiki, impartial. Yes, we have partnerships with agencies, but we just are promoting excellence at the moment. Excellence that we know how the foster carers are treated, looked after, the you know, the packages they get, the benefits. Because actually, ultimately, if the carer isn't happy and well looked after and able to get the support for the children and so forth, the outcomes aren't going to be good. So people could say, oh, you just concentrate on what about the children? Well, it is about the children, ultimately. So do your homework. Find out independently about agencies and things around that. Ask around. We might be on fostering groups on Facebook and things like that. But Foster Wiki is a great source of information, and we're building a kind of national directory of good fostering providers around the UK. So don't be sold on the adverts and the people that you speak to at the other end necessarily, because they're all going to say they're really good and what they offer. Try and get it from a foster carer. Try and speak to the carers. Like you offer that access to carers within your agency, which says to me that, you know, and you're not just picking one or two, you're saying, which one would you like to speak to?
Yeah.
So trust your instincts when you're speaking to people. Are they being open, transparent with you? Are they, you know, are you feeling confident in what they're offering? Is it going to be better than where you are? Don't mention anything to your existing provider until you're sure. And the very first thing your existing provider needs to have before any verbal anything is the letter of intent. Mm. which means you are intending to transfer. Never resign.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you cannot have children if you're a resigned foster carer. Yeah. Some people do make that mistake, and then they're not, the children have to go because they're not covered.
I know, it's quite scary,
very
isn't it?
Process.
Yeah.
Where, you know, on it is a delicate process. On the same day, you have to be deregistered and registered with the new things. And that's up to the agencies to get that right. And get a copy of your Form F. If your current agency is saying you can't have it, you can. You just send them a subject access request. Those are my top tips, really. I'm not saying don't trust the provider you're with currently, but be very careful to follow the right procedure in order to get the safest outcome for you. Copy in the National Union of Professional Foster Carers, if you're a member, or somebody from the outside as well, so that the current provider can see that you're having help from an independent source, as it were. I've covered it.
Yeah, that's good advice. There's a lot there actually for people to think about, and I guess do your research.
Yes.
There's a lot of information available. I mean, I think Foster Wiki is a great resource hub for lots of different questions to be answered. And, you know, there's plenty of agencies, I mean, certainly us included, where if people wanted to just have a chat, as I said, there's no commitment to a person looking to inquire, or, you know, we happily will send out one of our transferring information packs, which has some of the information that you've just shared. You know, don't do this, look at doing it like this, so that you don't fall foul of the way the regulations work. And when we do, for example, our fostering protocol meetings, we talk everything through with the potential transferring foster carer, and we enable them to understand these are the bits that you really should follow, these are the bits you must follow.
Yes.
You know, this is what we will do to protect your registration, etc. And I think it's about you become a team within that protocol system, don't you? And more often than not, I think the way that we've handled the protocol meetings, because more often than not we chair them, you know, it's not uncommon for us to chair the protocol meetings ourselves. And you know, it's fine because we're getting skilled at it, but I think it's a bit of, you know, doing it and making sure that when the foster carer can attend themselves, which we hope they can, that there's clarity of understanding, you know, what's being shared in advance and what they might still need some clarification on. And also then we can advocate for them as part of that meeting so that everybody comes out fully aware, and we capture it all in writing as well, so that there's no room for, well, you didn't say that, we capture it all. So I think, it feels like, you know, I say to people, you don't have to dance over there in the rain. Feeling unhappy, come and dance with us over here in the sunshine.
It's absolutely true. We need to normalise the transfer process. We need to normalise it. I mean, my last thing I'd like to say to foster carers out there looking to transfer or unhappy where they are, I'd like to say to them, because I do feel that foster carers have a sort of very low collective self-esteem, and that's due to the way that we're employed and the way that we've been traditionally quite silenced and things. But I'd like to say to everybody, the ball's in your court. You are a valuable commodity. What you do is really valued. And as a foster carer, everybody wants you. Yeah. So take your time, go do your research. Don't be bamboozled into doing things. Stand your ground. Walk into your new place like you're an equal part of the team, hold your head up high and think of transferring as a normalised behaviour, not just some desperate move.
That is a perfect way to end this conversation. Sarah, thank you so much. The insight that you've provided has been truly phenomenal. I know there'll be a lot of listeners that will find it really useful. And I would recommend that if people are looking for an organisation that can give you a real independent view, look at Foster Wiki, for sure. Yeah. You've done a sterling job in creating it.
Thank you.
We feel very special to be collaborating with some of the work that you're doing. And to say that, you know, we will definitely be talking again soon.
Definitely.
There's so much left to talk about.
Yeah,
but for now,
thank you
so much. And
thank you.
Yes, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
To the Moon and Back Foster Care operates across Cambridgeshire, Peterborough, Norfolk, Hertfordshire and Essex. If you'd like to know more about fostering, then please get in touch via our website to themoonandbackfostercare.com. Alternatively, give us a call on 01223 800 420. Thank you.